You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. A lot of parents of kids at LAUSD schools are getting increasingly upset and angry about schools still being shut down. Some of them participated in a Zoom blackout of classes this week, and some gathered in protest in Westwood, complete with signs and bullhorns.
We are so fed up. All these other cities, all these other countries and states are figuring out how to reopen.
That's Dana Rosenthal speaking to KCBS TV. It is obviously a giant challenge for educators and administrators getting kids back in the classroom while this pandemic is still going on. Kelly Gonez is the president of the LA Unified School Board. She's been dealing with this issue, obviously, for close to a year now, and she's with us today. Madam President, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
What do you say to parents like the one you just heard who say they're so fed up with their kids struggling with distance learning? I mean, they've heard the CDC, they've heard LA County Health Department officials give the go-ahead for at least elementary schools to open. I mean, we're hearing about other school districts moving forward on that advice. Where is LAUSD in that process?
Well, you know, first I want to say that I really do empathize with parents. I know that distance learning is a struggle. I'm a parent myself of two young kids, so I know that it's been a really difficult time. And I want to assure all of our families that we want to and are urgently working towards reopening schools here in LA Unified, but it has to be safe for everyone. And right now, we're certainly hearing most loudly from the parents who want schools to reopen. But as we've seen in school districts across the country who have been able to reopen in a hybrid model, not every family is comfortable attending. And those who are highest need and who've been hardest hit by the pandemic, our low-income families, our Black and Latino families, are the most reticent to return in person. So I think it's important to take into account that parents don't feel one particular way about this issue. I would also say that LA Unified is working as quickly as possible to be able to be in a place where we can safely reopen our schools. While COVID cases have dropped significantly since the peak in early January, and obviously we're really happy about that, we're still at an overall very high level of the virus here in LA County. We're still at the place where we were in November and at the peak of the summer surge. And we know that yesterday the county hit the sobering milestone of 20,000 lives lost due to COVID. So I think we want to see continued progress in those COVID rates dropping so that all of our communities can truly be assured of their safety.
I know there's this back and forth, right? And you've got to make sure, you know, that everybody is satisfied or everybody feels comfortable, but why not open some of the campuses, at least for the younger kids and for those who don't want to have their children in school or feel, you know, that it's a risk, find some way to do both. Can you do that?
Well, that is the plan. That is what we're working towards, would be a hybrid reopening, focusing primarily on our elementary schools with a special emphasis on our early elementary grades and our early education programs. And it would offer families a choice whether they wanted to continue remote or move into a hybrid model. But I think, you know, what's preventing us from getting there is that we want to see, one, that the COVID rates continue to decline and stay that way. Because we've had moments throughout the pandemic where we've had lower rates only to see them bounce right back up due to decisions around reopening some businesses. And so we want to see that those COVID rates remain low and continue declining, with a particular eye on the communities of color that LA Unified serves. And we want to see access to vaccines for our school staff. And, you know, that's a key metric to make sure that all of our community remains safe, not just the employees, but also the students and families who interact with them on school sites.
When do you think that in-person learning might start up again?
So LA Unified is resuming some targeted in-person services to our high-need students next week. We had to close those back in December due to skyrocketing case numbers, but we are starting those back up next week, and we will be expanding, you know, how many students are impacted by those, including by reopening some of our outdoor early education programs over the month of March. So progress is certainly being made. And then in terms of a broader system-wide reopening, obviously that's very dependent on the two factors that I laid out, you know, continued and steady, steady low COVID rates in the communities that LA Unified serves and access to the vaccines for our school staff. But with those two factors in mind, our superintendent has set a target date of April 9th of what we're working towards for planning purposes to be able to move into a hybrid model. So we're looking for county decisions that will continue to reduce the spread and keep it that way, and working towards making sure that our school staff have immediate access to the vaccine.
Do you see that happening?
You know, the governor made a decision to set aside 10% of the state's doses for school staff last week. I think that that's progress. LA Unified, you know, is actually going to be providing vaccines in a real way. We opened our first school-based vaccination site at Roybal Learning Center last week, where we're offering doses to those who are currently eligible. So that is only staff over 65 and those who are working at our testing or vaccination sites. We also have plans, you know, we're ready to open a mega vaccination site at Hollywood Park in Inglewood, where we'd be able to vaccinate educators and school staff from any school in LA County starting on March 1st. So, you know, we're at the table, we're doing our part. You know, it is really dependent on, I think, choices, but locally at the state level to really prioritize school staff, recognizing that that is a key piece of the puzzle of reopening our schools. But also getting the doses that we need. We know that there has been a limited supply of doses, and that is a real challenge.
I want to pivot to another important issue that you guys are dealing with over there. And last week, you and the rest of the school board voted to reduce the size of the LAUSD campus police force by about a third. This is something that's been coming for a while now. Some of the money that you save would replace officers with something that you call climate coaches, which is a curious term. I was immediately struck by that phrase because I think of, you know, climate. I think of climate change. What are climate coaches? What will they be doing?
Yeah, so I think that is a place where maybe our education speak it might be a little confusing to the general public. So in the world of education, school climate is what that word climate refers to. And it's really about creating a safe and supportive and welcoming environment for all students and families. And so the climate coaches, you know, while they will certainly be equipped to supervise students and to walk campuses, to greet visitors and to make sure all of those day-to-day procedures and routines are safe, they are really the folks who will help create a climate on campus that is safe for all students. And so that means that they'll be specially trained in implicit bias and de-escalation techniques and restorative justice and with working with youth in particular, since that is who we serve in LA, in LAUSD.
Are they going to be armed?
They will not be armed. Again, the goal is, you know, we are not having armed police officers on our campus. Instead, we are recognizing that school safety is the responsibility of everyone. You know, my perspective, having been a teacher in middle and high school, is that relationships are actually what make students most safe. It's having a caring adult that you can turn to if you're in a moment of crisis and knowing that that support and resource exists on campus. So I think we are moving to more of a care and support model, which I think is developmentally appropriate for students and also the equitable approach given, you know, that policies and decisions have been made that have marginalized particularly our Black students over time in our public schools.
You know, one of the things about going back to work or getting back to normal is making sure the kids are taken care of. And I know you're dealing with that as a parent yourself, but also as a professional in what you do. Kelly Gonas, president of the LAUSD School Board. Madam President, thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, speaking of the classroom, a couple of questions for you today. The Italian Renaissance designer Filippo Brunelleschi is well known for completing what famous building? Here's another one. What's the measure of one interior angle of a regular decagon? Those are just a couple of samples, by the way, for the academic decathlon. It's kind of like if Jeopardy was a high school sport or like taking the SATs for fun. This year, Ulysses S. Grant High School in Valley Glen won the academic decathlon for the LA Unified School District. It is the school's first ever win. They head to the state championship next month with dreams of making it even into the nationals. And joining me now is the top scorer in the district, Yadira Castillo, who's on the line. Yadira, welcome to you.
Hi, how are you? Good intro. I thought I was going to be quizzed.
Do you know the answers to those questions? Don't give them to me, but do you know the answers?
I'm sure if I thought about the math a little bit more, yes.
How did it feel to win the regionals? I mean, the first ever, and you're the top scorer.
Yeah, it was definitely surreal. I think I've been in this since freshman year, and I've only been competing for 3 years, but I guess it was finally that moment where all of your hard work pays off. And last year, we actually lost by one question. So you can imagine how that felt. This year, I think it made the win even that much better because we, despite the whole pandemic and despite having to study on Zoom, we stuck to it. And, you know, we were like, okay, it's not going to happen to us the way that it did last year. And I think it was really a motivation for us.
You have competed, though, in decathlons before the pandemic. Describe what those were like and how this year's virtual competition was different.
The years before, it usually takes place at Roy Ball, which is in downtown Los Angeles. It's another high school. And so you're with a bunch of different schools.
Right off of Beaudry.
Yeah, and you meet a lot of people, and it's a fun experience because you sort of are pushed outside of your comfort shell. Obviously, this year I was in my own room. but I think that when you're in person at all of these competitions, you feel the pressure a little bit more, and everyone's sort of freaking out at the same time. And as nerve-wracking as it is a really fun experience. And I think that that's sort of what we missed out on as a team this year because we were on Zoom all the time. But at the same time, it doesn't really take away from all of the effort that we have to put in and from the fact that it's still such a rewarding extracurricular and that you still need the support from your coach and from your school district. All of that really does stay the same.
Your teammates took the tests from home, right? I mean, you were all at home. How do judges, Yadira, how do they make sure that you're not, dare I say, cheating, you know, looking something up from home or whatever? I mean, did they know what you were doing?
So it's a program that is put on our Google Chrome that we have to log in, and we have very specific logins. And I don't think they ever really tell us whether they're watching, but I'm sure that they have access to whether we leave the website or not. And for other events like speech and interview, you're being proctored on Zoom and they're like intently watching the way that I know that they released a statement saying that they would be watching the direction that your eyes were moving in to make sure you weren't looking off of the screen.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm sure they have their methods.
Your school is still teaching virtually. You're not in class. You missed a good bit of your junior year. Now you're a senior. You're not seeing your friends. Do you still see them on Zoom? How are you socializing? It's a big deal for a senior to not be socializing, right?
Yeah. So with my team, at least, I'm with them on Zoom every day till late at night. And my other friends who aren't on the team, we do a lot of FaceTime. Sometimes we'll do Zooms. And what we'll do is you can share a whiteboard. And so we'll play games like Hangman or things like that. There's also Netflix Party that came out. So you can watch Netflix movies together and talk on the side. So there's different ways we keep in touch.
You're preparing for now the States?
Yes. And the tests definitely jump up a level.
I wish you the best of luck. Yadira Castillo, senior over at Ulysses S. Grant High School in Valley Glen, top academic decathlete at the LA Unified School District. Yadira, thank you. Congratulations. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much. Have a nice day.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
And now we take you to a greenhouse in La Jolla. This particular greenhouse doesn't just have glass walls and rows of plants in pots. There are also microscopes and high-tech cameras and x-ray machines. It has to be cooled with powerful fans. And there are professors here, like Wolfgang Busch,
If you'd go in the greenhouse, you would see people watering plants and people washing off the soil and the dirt from root systems to measure, to weigh the root systems.
This is a greenhouse lab at the Salk Institute, where Bush and other scientists are trying to harness the carbon-sucking power of plants to clean up the atmosphere. You've heard time and again that humans are emitting too much carbon dioxide into the air. Scientists and climate change activists are working around the clock to figure out how to fix it. But what if the answer lies in something that's been pulling carbon out of the atmosphere for eons? Take a listen to the Salk Institute's Joanne Corey.
I live in a world where there's too much CO2 in the air atmosphere because of human activity, but I've come to appreciate the plants as amazing machines that they are, whose job has been really to just suck up CO2, and they do it so well because they've been doing it for over 500 million years.
Now, today's story is part of Greater LA's series called Wasted, exploring neat solutions to the dirty problem of waste in California. KCRW's Francis Anderton and Kaylee Wells take us into the greenhouse and below the ground where carbon comes from and where more of it could go.
Joanne Corey is a renowned plant geneticist, and she is focused on getting plant roots to work harder to help solve a massive waste problem. Her concept is called the Harnessing Plants Initiative. She explained it at a TED Talk in 2019.
What plants do is they use the energy in sunlight, take that CO2 and fix it into sugars. And so even though we're not doing a great job at cutting our emissions and things, plants have the capacity as photosynthetic organisms to help out, so we're hoping that's what they'll do.
Joanne is leading a team at the Salk Institute. Here's Wolfgang Busch, a professor and one of those team members.
Most people think of carbon as a pollutant, as the bad guy in the story, and that's true for global warming. But carbon is also the fertilizer for plants.
So they reduce the bad guy pollution role played by carbon.
And enhance the good guy role as a soil enricher. The goal is to enlarge plant roots by altering their cellular structure. Wolfgang says they focus on three things.
Which are getting plants to sprout more roots, growing roots that go deeper into the soil, and causing the roots to produce more of something called suberin. That's a kind of cork in plant roots that is a sponge for carbon.
If you think about a fertile, dark soil, this darkness, the blackness, that's carbon.
So, just to give this some context, the Harnessing Plants Initiative is an idea that's being developed right here in Southern California, but it is part of a global effort underway to find ways to sequester carbon.
And by sequester, we mean deliberately removing CO2 from the atmosphere or emissions and store it in the ocean, in geologic formations, and in vegetation.
Think trees, and especially the all-important Amazon rainforest.
And then, of course, in soils. There are actually quite a few efforts to keep the carbon trapped in the soil.
We need all hands on deck to get that carbon down and safe in the soil or wherever we put it, that it doesn't heat up our planet further.
So now let's talk about the status of that project.
Well, the team is currently doing tests on what they call model plant species.
Think rice, tobacco, maize, stuff that grows quickly.
And now they have just started their first experiments in crop plants in their garden at Salk.
And by crop plants, they mean
widely grown crops. Think corn, soybean, rice, wheat, canola, and sorghum.
So they want this to go global.
Yes.
This does make you wonder a few things, though. Like, for starters, GMOs. Lots of people get really worried about genetically modifying plants.
Absolutely. It's a concern.
And Wolfgang Busch says that they're absolutely sure that this process is safe and that it won't even affect the flavor of crops. And besides, he says, genetic engineering is a technology to change plants just in the way that breeding has been done for millennia.
Okay, so we don't need to be worried about the arrival of any weird Frankenplants anytime soon.
He definitely doesn't want you to worry about weird Frankenplants. And he also adds that this is a very precise gene editing technique that he says is going to be much quicker to get results than other methods.
Climate crisis is a very urgent problem. And I personally don't think we have a lot of time to get our act together as a global civilization to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere through many different means.
But as I'm listening to Wolfgang, I keep wondering, why go to all this trouble with messing with plant roots when we could just plant more trees?
And he pointed out that forests need land, and we, human beings, have used up a lot of that land for food production.
Oh, like with all the meat that we eat.
If it competes with our ability as the human civilization to produce food, to feed people, it is hard to imagine that we can actually dedicate much more land to have much more forest.
So that takes us right back to the human element. And there's kind of a certain level of hubris here,
leading to the question, what about just emitting less carbon? Adam Minter has something to say about that. He reports on waste. He's the author most recently of the book Secondhand.
You know, especially in the wake of the oil shocks in the 1970s, people developed all kinds of technologies that were designed to help us save energy. But one of the things we found in when that happened was people didn't suddenly start conserving more. They said, oh, I'm using electricity less. I can actually use electricity more and essentially be at the same place.
So Adam Minter, he wonders if we're solving the wrong problem here, going to a lot of trouble to toy with plants to support our addiction to fossil fuels, when perhaps we should be focusing on conservation of energy and land.
When I hear about people saying, well, the roots are essentially machines that suck carbon out of the air, my fear is that it's going to become like energy conservation again, where people are saying, well, we've got something sucking the carbon out of the atmosphere, so we can just keep generating the same amount of carbon and it's going to have less impact. And ultimately, that's going to be self-defeating.
We've actually been thinking a lot about this paradox as we've worked on this series together.
We have, Kaylee. The paradox is the answer to waste management to create clever tech solutions to the problems created by our clever tech?
Or would it be better and simpler to just cut back on the consumption that produces the waste?
Like, for example, should we buy a new electric car or take the bus or ride our bikes?
Or what about cutlery? Like, is it better to devote resources to creating biodegradable plastic knives and forks? Or do we just hold on to and wash reusable ones?
And Kaylee, I have a really big bugbear, clothes dryers.
Oh, I know. For centuries, we used clotheslines. What happened to the clotheslines?
Especially in a state which is essentially a clothes dryer. It's a state with an endless supply of free hot air, and we still dry our clothes in energy-guzzling machines.
Which, by the way, destroy and wear out our clothes faster, so then we have to buy more of them.
And on it goes. Sorry to depress you, everybody. But this phenomenon actually has a name. It's called techno-optimism. And techno-optimism is deeply tied up with being Californian. That's according to the historian Margaret O'Mara.
Californian techno-optimism creates an expansive possibility. Look, I'm talking to you using devices that have 10 times the computing power of the rockets that took American astronauts to the moon. But it also has had very severe consequences.
Margaret is a professor at the University of Washington and author of the book The Code, Silicon Valley and the Remaking of America.
And putting great faith in technology allows possibilities to be expanded. But it also can narrow the view and not think about the broader consequences.
So I hear all these thoughts about techno-optimism, and they make sense, but now I'm thinking back to Wolfgang Busch with the Harnessing Plants Initiative.
And he said it's possible to have both and. The answer lies in conservation and action.
I personally think we need to do everything that is in our power to avert this catastrophic outcome. We need to emit less, but also I don't think we can assume we can stop burning fossil fuels tomorrow. We still need to draw down carbon to come back to safe levels, and that's where the value of our solution is.
And he's sure that you can intervene smartly and safely. For KCRW, I'm Frances Anderton.
And I'm Kaylee Wills. Next week, we're going to talk about thinking outside the box when it comes to packaging.
Oh, very witty, Kaylee.
Well, that's it for us this evening. Tomorrow, COVID rates and the number of deaths may be on the decline, but funeral homes all over Greater LA are still dealing with a massive backlog. That's creating a good bit of stress. That story tomorrow on this program. Subscribe to the podcast Check us out online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Get episodes delivered fresh to your feed and tell us how you're doing too. Share your thoughts with us and help us cover Greater LA. kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Guys, PJ Shahamat, Chuck P., Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Mike Stark, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen this evening. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ears and for your time. Have yourself a great night.